Chapter 4. The Effect and Use of Controls. This chapter briefly discusses the devices with which the pilot operates the airplane in the air and on the ground, and how those devices are to be used effectively. To maneuver an airplane, the pilot must control its movement around its lateral, longitudinal, and vertical axes. This is accomplished by the use of the flight controls, elevators, ailerons, and rudder, which can be deflected from their neutral position into the flow of air as the airplane moves forward through the air. During flight, the flight controls have a natural live pressure due to the force of the airflow around them. With this in mind, the pilot should think not of moving the flight controls, but of exerting force on them against this live pressure or resistance. Elevators. The elevators control the movement of the airplane about its lateral axis. They form the rear part of the horizontal stabilizer and are free to be moved up and down by the pilot and are connected to a control stick or wheel in the cockpit by means of cables or rods. Applying forward pressure on the control causes the elevator surfaces to move downward. The flow of air striking the deflected elevator surfaces exerts an upward force, pushing the airplane's tail upward and the nose downward. Conversely, exerting back pressure on the control causes the elevator surfaces to move up, exerting a downward force to push the tail downward and the nose upward. In effect, the elevators are the angle of attack control. When back pressure is applied on the control, the tail lowers and the nose raises, thus increasing the wing's angle of attack and lift. Some airplanes have a movable horizontal surface called a stabilator, which serves the same purpose as the horizontal stabilizer and elevators combined. When the cockpit control is moved, the complete stabilator is moved to raise or lower its leading edge, thus changing its angle of attack and amount of lift. Ailerons. The ailerons control the airplane's movement about its longitudinal axis. There are two ailerons, one at the trailing edge of each wing, near the wingtips. They are movable surfaces hinged to the wing's rear spar and are linked together by cables or rods so that when one aileron is deflected down, the opposite aileron moves up. Contrary to popular belief, the lift on the wings is the force that turns the airplane in flight, not the rudder. To obtain the horizontal component of lift required to pull the airplane in the desired direction of turn, the wings must be banked in that direction. When the pilot applies pressure to the left on the control stick or turns the control wheel toward the left, the right aileron surface deflects downward and the left aileron deflects upward. The force exerted by the airflow on the deflected surfaces raises the right wing and lowers the left wing. This happens because the downward deflection of the right aileron changes the wing camber and increases the angle of attack and lift on that wing. Simultaneously, the left aileron moves upward and changes the effective camber, resulting in a decreased angle of attack and less lift. Thus, decreased lift on the left wing and increased lift on the right wing causes the airplane to roll and bank to the left. Since the downward deflected aileron produces more lift, it also produces more drag, while the opposite aileron has less lift and less drag. This added drag attempts to pull or veer the airplane's nose in the direction of the raised wing, that is, it tries to turn the airplane in the direction opposite to that desired. This undesired veering is referred to as adverse yaw. To demonstrate this in flight, an attempt can be made to turn to the right without using the rudder pedals. As right aileron pressure is applied, the airplane rolls into a right bank and tries to turn to the right. But the adverse yaw, or the drag on the downward deflected left aileron, pulls the airplane's nose to the left. The airplane banks, but it turns hesitantly and sideslips. This is undesirable, and corrective action should be taken by applying right rudder pressure. When right rudder pressure is applied simultaneously with right aileron pressure, it keeps the airplane from yawing opposite to the desired direction of turn. In fact, the rudder must be used because the ailerons were used. Therefore, neither of those controls should be used separately when making normal turns. To minimize this undesirable effect, adverse yaw, many airplanes are designed with differential-type ailerons, or Fries-type ailerons. Differential-type ailerons. Though not entirely eliminating adverse yaw, the differential-type aileron system raises one aileron a greater distance than the other aileron is lowered for a given movement of the control stick or wheel. In this case, since the raised aileron has as much or more surface area exposed to the airflow, thus increased drag, than the lowered aileron, the adverse yaw is greatly reduced. Fries-type ailerons. The design of the aileron surface itself has also been improved by the Fries-type aileron. With this type of aileron, when pressure on the control stick or wheel is applied to one side, raising one of the ailerons, the leading edge of that aileron, which has an offset hinge, projects down into the airflow and creates drag. This helps equalize the drag created by the lowered aileron on the opposite wing and thus reduces adverse yaw. The Fries-type aileron also forms a slot so that the air flows smoothly over the lowered aileron. This helps to make the aileron movement effective at high angles of attack. However, despite these improvements, some rudder application is still needed whenever ailerons are applied. Rudder. The rudder controls movement of the airplane about its vertical axis. This is the motion called yaw. Like the other primary control surfaces, the rudder is a movable surface hinged to a fixed surface, in this case to the vertical stabilizer or fin. Movement of the rudder is controlled by two rudder pedals, left and right. Its action is very much like that of the elevators, except that it moves in a different plane. The rudder deflects from side to side instead of up and down. When the rudder is deflected to one side, it protrudes into the airflow, causing a horizontal force to be exerted in the opposite direction. This pushes the tail of the airplane in that direction and yaws the nose in the desired direction. When rudder is used for steering during ground taxiing, the propeller slipstream provides the force to yaw or turn the airplane in the desired direction. As mentioned earlier, the primary purpose of the rudder in flight is to counteract the effect of adverse yaw and to help provide directional control of the airplane. In flight, the rudder does not turn the airplane. Instead, the force of the horizontal component of lift turns the airplane when the wings are banked. As in the demonstration of turning by use of ailerons alone, this can be verified by flying straight and level, and then, after taking the hands off the aileron control, trying to turn to the right by applying right rudder pressure only. At first, it may seem to work pretty well. The airplane will turn to the right, but it will also skid to the left. A skid in a turn is caused by insufficient angle of bank for a given radius of turn. Since the airplane possesses inherent stability, it will tend to stop the skid by banking itself to the right. If the pilot were now to neutralize the rudder, only a shallow banking turn would result. However, inasmuch as the purpose of this demonstration is to make a turn using only the rudder, continue to hold right rudder pressure. Since the airplane is slightly banked to the right, the rudder will force the nose of the airplane downward to the right. The reason for this is that yawing is the only movement the rudder can produce. As a result, the nose yaws downward, the airspeed increases, and the airplane starts losing altitude. At the same time, the airplane, being stable, attempts to stop the increased skidding by banking more steeply. The more steeply it banks, the more the nose is yawed downward by the right rudder action. The net result of holding rudder alone is a descending spiral unless back elevator pressure is applied. Thus, it can be seen that rudder alone cannot produce a coordinated turn. Blending aileron, rudder, and elevator pressure does that. Use of the flight controls. The following will always be true regardless of the airplane's attitude in relation to the earth. 1. When back pressure is applied to the elevator control, the airplane's nose rises in relation to the pilot. 2. When forward pressure is applied to the elevator control, the airplane's nose lowers in relation to the pilot. 3. When right rudder pressure is applied to the aileron control, the airplane's right wing lowers in relation to the pilot. 4. When left pressure is applied to the aileron control, the airplane's left wing lowers in relation to the pilot. 5. When pressure is applied to the right rudder pedal, the airplane's nose moves to the right in relation to the pilot. And 6. When pressure is applied to the left rudder pedal, the airplane's nose moves to the left in relation to the pilot. The preceding explanations should prevent the beginning pilot from thinking in terms of up or down in respect to the earth, which is only a relative state to the pilot. It will also make understanding of the functions of the controls much easier, particularly when performing steep bank turns or the more advanced maneuvers. Consequently, the pilot must be able to properly determine the control application required to place the airplane in any attitude or flight condition that is desired. Coordinated use of all controls is extremely important in any turn. Applying aileron pressure is necessary to place the airplane in the desired angle of bank, while simultaneous application of rudder pressure is required to counteract the resultant adverse yaw. During a turn, the angle of attack must be increased by application of elevator pressure because more lift is required than when in straight and level flight. The steeper the turn, the more back elevator pressure is needed. After the bank and turn are established, the airplane may continue in a constant turn when all pressure on the ailerons and rudder is released, or it may require some opposite aileron to prevent the bank angle from increasing. It may also require continued aileron pressure in the direction of turn to prevent returning to the wing's level attitude. This will be discussed in more detail in the chapter on basic flight maneuvers. After learning how the airplane will react when the flight controls are used, the pilot must learn how to use them properly. Rough and erratic usage of all or any of the controls will cause the airplane to react accordingly. Therefore, the pilot must form the habit of applying pressures smoothly and evenly. The amount of force the airflow exerts on a control surface is governed by the airspeed and the degree that surface is moved out of its neutral or streamlined position. Since the airspeed will not be the same in all maneuvers, the actual amount the control surfaces are moved is of little importance, but it is important that the pilot maneuver the airplane by applying sufficient control pressures to obtain a desired result, regardless of how far the control surfaces are actually moved. The pilot's feet should rest comfortably against the rudder pedals. Both heels should support the weight of the feet on the cockpit floor, with the ball of each foot touching the individual rudder pedals. The legs and feet should not be tense. They must be relaxed, just as when driving an automobile. When using the rudder pedals, pressure should be applied smoothly and evenly by pressing with the ball of one foot, just as when using the brakes of an automobile. Since the rudder pedals are interconnected and act in opposite directions, when pressure is applied to one pedal, pressure on the other must be relaxed proportionally. When the rudder pedal must be moved significantly, heavy pressure changes should be made by applying the pressure with the ball of the foot, while the heels slide along the cockpit floor. Remember, the ball of each foot must rest comfortably on the rudder pedals so that even slight pressure changes can be felt. During flight, it is the pressure the pilot exerts on the control stick or wheel and rudder pedals that cause the airplane to move about its axes. When a control surface is moved out of its streamlined position, even slightly, the air flowing past it will exert a force against it and will try to return it to its streamlined position. It is this force that the pilot feels as pressure on the control stick or wheel and the rudder pedals. Trim devices. The secondary flight controls are the trim tabs, balance tabs, or servo tabs. They are used for trimming and balancing the airplane in flight and to reduce the force required of the pilot in actuating the primary flight control surfaces. These tabs are really small airfoils attached to or recessed into the trailing edge of the primary control surfaces. Trim tabs. When an airplane's flight conditions, attitude, airspeed, loading, etc., and configuration are changed, the control pressures required to maintain the new flight conditions are affected by the resulting changes in aerodynamic forces. The placement of fuel, passengers, baggage, or cargo sometimes results in the airplane being wing-heavy, tail-heavy, or nose-heavy. To counteract such unbalanced conditions, the pilot will find it necessary to continually exert pressure on the control stick or wheel, or on the rudder pedals. Over a period of time, this becomes annoying and fatiguing. To relieve the pilot of this tiring effort, most airplanes are equipped with trim tabs, with which to trim the airplane for balanced flight. A trim tab is a small, adjustable, hinged surface located on the trailing edge of the aileron, rudder, or elevator control surface. It is used to maintain balance in straight and level flight and during other prolonged flight conditions without the pilot having to hold pressure on the controls. This is accomplished by deflecting the tab in the direction opposite to that in which the primary control surface must be held. The force of the airflow striking the tab causes the main control surface to be deflected to a position that will correct the unbalanced condition of the airplane. In many airplanes, the trim tabs may be adjusted by controls in the cockpit, while in some of the older types, they may be adjusted only on the ground. Those which can be controlled from the cockpit provide a trim control wheel or electric switch. To apply a trim force, the trim wheel or switch must be moved in the desired direction. The position in which the trim tab is set can usually be determined by reference to a trim indicator. Balance tabs. Balancing tabs look like trim tabs and are hinged in approximately the same places as trim tabs would be. The essential difference between the two is that the balancing tab is coupled to the control surface by a rod, so that when the primary control surface is moved in any direction, the tab automatically is moved in the opposite direction. In this manner, the airflow striking the tab counterbalances some of the air pressure against the primary control surface and enables the pilot to more readily move and hold it in position. These tabs also act as trim tabs as described above. Servo tabs. Servo tabs are very similar in operation and appearance to the trim tabs previously discussed. Servo tabs, sometimes referred to as flight tabs, are used primarily on the large airplanes. They aid the pilot in moving the control surface and in holding it in the desired position. Only the servo tab moves in response to movement of the pilot's flight control, and the force of the airflow on the servo tab then moves the primary control surface. Flaps control. The wing flaps are movable panels on the inboard trailing edges of the wings. They are hinged so that they may be extended downward into the flow of air beneath the wings to increase lift and drag. Their purpose is to permit a slower airspeed and a steeper angle of descent during a landing approach. In some cases, they are also used to shorten the takeoff distance. The flap operating control may be an electrical or hydraulic control on the instrument panel, or it may be a lever located on the floor to the right of the pilot's seat. In any case, the control may be placed in various positions by the pilot. Up, which raises flaps if they are in an extended position. Neutral, which allows the flaps to remain in whatever intermediate position they may be at that time. And down, which lowers the flaps if they are in the retracted or intermediate position. In addition to the flap operating control, there is usually an indicator which shows the actual position of the flaps. On most general aviation airplanes, the extent of travel of the flaps is approximately 30 degrees to 40 degrees. Extending and retracting the flaps has a very noticeable effect on the airplane's performance. With a constant power setting while maintaining level flight, the airspeed will be lower with flaps extended because of the drag they create. If power is adjusted to maintain a constant airspeed while in level flight, the airplane's pitch attitude will usually be lower with flaps extended. When the flaps are extended, the airspeed should be at or below the airplane's maximum flap extended speed, or VFE, because if they are extended above this airspeed, the force exerted by the airflow may result in damage to the flaps. If the airspeed limitations are exceeded unintentionally with the flaps extended, they should be retracted immediately regardless of airspeed. It is extremely important that the pilot form the habit of positively identifying the flap control before attempting to use it to raise or lower the flaps. This will prevent inadvertent operating of the landing gear control and retracting the gear instead of the flaps, particularly when on or near the ground. A complete discussion on the use and effect of flaps is provided in the chapter describing landing approaches and landings. Retractable landing gear control. Another control in airplanes so equipped is the control for operating the retractable landing gear. Since the purpose of the landing gear is to support the airplane while it is on the ground, it is merely excess weight and drag during flight. Though the airplane cannot be relieved of this weight while in flight, the landing gear can be retracted into the airplane structure and out of the airflow, thus eliminating the unnecessary drag. The control for operating the landing gear is a switch or lever, often in the shape of a wheel, to differentiate from the flap control, which has an airfoil shape, on the instrument panel. When the control is moved to the down position, the gear will extend. When the control is moved to the up position, the gear will retract. In addition to this operating control, an indicator or warning light is located on the instrument panel to show the position of the gear. The landing gear should be operated only when the airspeed is at or below the airplane's maximum landing gear operating speed, or VLO. Operation at a higher airspeed may cause damage to the operating mechanism. When the gear is down and locked, the airplane should not be operated in excess of the airplane's maximum landing gear extended speed, or VLE. It is extremely important that the pilot form the habit of positively identifying the landing gear control before attempting to use it to raise or lower the gear. Otherwise, the pilot may inadvertently use the flap control and operate the flaps instead of the gear. Throttle. The throttle is the control with which the pilot controls the engine's power output. In tandem seating airplanes, it is located on the left side of the cockpit along with other primary engine controls, and in side-by-side seating airplanes, it is centrally located on the lower portion of the instrument panel. On some airplanes, all the engine controls, throttle, mixture, and propeller, are installed on a separate unit called engine control quadrant. By means of linkage, the throttle is connected to the carburetor, or fuel control unit in fuel-injected engines, to regulate the amount of fuel-air mixture supplied to the engine, thereby controlling the power developed. The power output, and the engine RPM in the case of fixed-pitch propeller airplanes, is increased by pushing the throttle forward and decreased by pulling it aft. Unlike an automobile accelerator or gas pedal, the airplane's throttle has no spring return and will remain in any position to which it is set by the pilot. Undesired creeping can be prevented by means of a friction lock. Movement of the throttle should always be smooth, though positive, to ensure adequate and correct engine response when a change in power is needed. Rough or abrupt throttle usage may result in a delayed engine response or a complete loss of power, as well as in the possibility of exceeding the engine's limitations. Initial throttle movement should be made slowly, then followed by an increase in the rate of throttle movement as the engine responds. There is no situation that will be improved by rough or abrupt throttle usage, even when necessity requires quick changes in power. Mixture control. The fuel-air ratio of the combustible mixture delivered to the engine is controlled by the mixture control. This control, usually located adjacent to the throttle, is most often identified by a red knob, an indication to use it with caution. Like the throttle, it has no spring return and will remain in any position selected by the pilot. It also has a friction lock to prevent the control from creeping away from the desired setting. The ratio of fuel to air is the most critical single factor affecting the power output of an engine. If the fuel-air mixture is too lean, or too little fuel for the amount of air, in terms of weight, rough engine operation, sudden cutting out, or an appreciable loss of power may occur. Lean mixtures must be avoided when an engine is operating near maximum output, such as takeoffs, climbs, and go-arounds. At power settings in excess of 75% of the rated power, an excessively lean mixture will cause detonation, serious overheating, loss of power, and damage to the engine. If the fuel-air mixture is too rich or too much fuel for the amount of air in terms of weight, rough engine operation and an appreciable loss of power may also occur. Carburetors and fuel control units normally are calibrated for sea level operations, which means that the correct mixture of fuel and air will be obtained at sea level with the mixture control in the full rich position. As altitude increases, the air density decreases, that is, a cubic foot of air will not weigh as much as it would at a lower altitude. Consequently, as the flight altitude increases, the weight of air entering the cylinders will decrease, although the volume will remain the same. The amount of fuel entering the cylinders is more dependent on the volume of air than the weight of air. Therefore, as the flight altitude increases, the amount of fuel will remain approximately the same for any given throttle setting if the position of the mixture control remains unchanged. Since the same amount or weight of fuel, but a lesser amount or weight of air is entering the cylinders, the fuel-air mixture becomes richer as altitude increases. Moving the mixture control full forward to the rich position provides the richest fuel mixture. This setting is used for all operations on the ground and at high power settings. Movement of the control aft toward the lean position progressively leans the mixture. The amount of leaning required varies with altitude. Moving the control full aft to idle cutoff shuts off all fuel at the carburetor or the fuel control unit. The manufacturer's recommendations for leaning the fuel mixture in the particular airplane should always be followed. Propeller control. On airplanes equipped with a controllable propeller, the pilot's manual control of the propeller is maintained by a control lever adjacent to the throttle. It is used for the selection of the desired propeller or engine speed. Any rotational speed or revolutions per minute within the prop's governor operating range can be selected by adjusting the lever fore and aft between the full decrease RPM position to the full increase RPM position. The propeller control lever is connected to a propeller governor unit, which in turn adjusts the propeller blades to establish the selected RPM settings. As the propeller control lever is moved forward, propeller and engine speed, or RPM, will increase. If the control is moved aft, RPM will decrease. In a constant speed propeller system, the governor automatically maintains the selected engine speed by varying the pitch of the propeller blades to compensate for varying engine loads, regardless of the airplane's attitude. A setting introduced into the governor by the pilot determines the RPM to be maintained, and the governor then controls the pitch required to maintain the RPM.